Hey everybody, Obi from the Obi and Axe Show. Today we have an amazing guest, but first I want to thank Michelle Romanow for the opportunity to allow us in these beautiful studios. My guest today, TEDx speaker, he's coming off a decade of founding and operating e-com startups on an international level. He is currently the CEO of Emerge Commerce, my dear friend, Ghassan Halazon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Andy. It's great to be here and to see you in action and be a part of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, as I was mentioning, you know, you and I go back a ways. And as I was telling you, you know, one of the big reasons, you know, I wanted you on here is I know that, you know, that if there's anybody that's operated in high pressure situations, it's yourself. And this show specifically talks about addiction, mental health, and how it ties into entrepreneurship and lifestyle. So I thought this was a great fit. I'm so glad to have you here. And I think the audience needs to know, you know, how did this all begin for you? You know, where did this entrepreneurial bug bite you?
You know, I have to go back to my my time in New York on Wall Street. I was a banker, pretty disgruntled one at that, and 2008 to 2010, crazy years on the street, as you can imagine, right at the beginning of the recession. And you know, I knew for a fact that I just wasn't going to fit into an organization that had so much structure and so much bureaucracy, frankly. And so that was the time when I made my move and my big leap into entrepreneurship. Ended up partnering with a couple of guys that I met online, not like that, and ended up moving to Toronto.
Not that kind of show.
Moved to Toronto to start a company with these guys, and we did it garage style from the ground up, you know, $0 to $60 million dollars in a couple of years. We were in our 20s. And you know, frankly, that was a lot of pressure in its own right, but obviously there's been a couple of iterations since then, as we ended up, pretty much restructuring the business and selling it and coming back to start a new wave, really sort of when, the stakes were at their highest when I started Emerge.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the areas that, I think people don't focus on, you know, as much as they see a company doing really well. But they don't kind of see behind the scenes. They don't see when you're pulling your hair out. They don't see, you know, when all, as we were just talking before the show, when all the marbles are at stake, you know, when you're at that free throw line and the game's on the line for the title. That's really what it comes down to, because a wrong move with any part of that budget at a critical time can be detrimental, you know, to the business. So what were a couple of things that, you know, how did you get around all of the stress?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to sort of tie that back to where we are today and why managing stress is such a big part of the way I approach things.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, as you said, a decade into the game, hundreds of employees, about 250 to 300 employees over the last 10 years that I've had to manage and grow and partner with. So as you can imagine, not only from an investment perspective, but from a pure responsibility perspective, to come into work every day and be responsible for so much and so many lives, you know, it starts to impact you and impact the way you're wired, right? And so sometimes as time goes and, you know, again, many years into this, at some point your body and your mind tell you or warn you that, look, whether it's you growing up or whether it's you not thinking about the pressures and giving enough time to yourself, it catches up to you. And that's exactly what happened to me early on in Emerge, which was my second big venture. And as you said, the stakes were at their highest because we were here to prove everybody wrong. And we were here to prove that our renewed model was going to work.
It's going to work. And I think this actually brings us to a great intersection. I think we'll back it up a little bit. I think so where we should go here is how did, I'll let you take the floor here, how you and I had met. And then we can kind of talk a little bit about, you know, what happens at Emerge, because I want to know a little bit more about, you know, what's happening there currently. But I'll.
Well, as we've joked before, I mean, the Daily Deal Wars deserve, you know, a full book with all the escapades we've been through in the industry over the last decade. Obviously, coming from two opposing sides, you coming from the Buytopia side with Michelle and others, you were a formidable force. Obviously, on our end with Team Buy, which was my original venture, we were playing, you know, the fastest wins game, right? We were playing scale or die, essentially, a very VC-driven mentality.
Deal.
That's right.
It was deal
but,
of the
but
day.
But also scale. Yeah. Don't worry about sustainability. Don't worry about profitability. And that was a mandate given to us by the venture capitalists that were backing our company. We had U.S., Russia, Russian, Canadian, and even Italian investors. We used to joke that, that we were something out of a Guy Ritchie movie with, with all those constituencies, right? So, so you know, but we got that mandate to raise the capital and to go very fast and very hard. And, you know, when the cycle turned, when the business model wasn't as sexy anymore, we had to recalibrate. And that's where Buytopia, I thought, did a very good job of keeping lean and keeping mean, to you guys' credit. And so effectively, we were larger, but we didn't have the profitability. And so we had to sort of restructure our business and ultimately sell it and unwind the portion that was unprofitable. That's when I moved aside. So obviously, when we, with Emerge, founded this this company on the premise that building profitably from the ground up, something that's lacking in today's startup world, you know, we looked to Buytopia. We thought that would be a great acquisition and a great partner in everything we were going to be doing, which is effectively Emerge as an acquirer and operator of profitable digital deal sites in North America and soon to be globally. And so when we acquired Buytopia, that's kind of when you and I partnered there for a while. Yeah. You know, you were on the sales side and heading up partnerships, and we did some great work together.
Yeah, it was fun because I remember in the days where, you know, when we had started, when Buytopia had started, you know, we were not really on anybody's radar, you know, and we were joking around. I think that one of the more, one of the funniest things that I can think back to is when Anatoly and Michelle and I had walked into the woman's show. And I remember we had a couple of individuals with the company were carrying our table. We had a skirt for the table. I think we had a sign that we drew. And I look up and I see this giant team by, it looked like a mansion in itself, at this, at the women's show. And it was intimidating. You know, so that was the first encounter where I had, you know, heard about you guys. And it's funny because, you know, you look back today, we were, you know, competitors for years. And then, you know, when we joined forces, it was really great to bring all of our experiences together, you know, because now the stakes were a little bit different. But one and the same, I think, in that, you know, you still have to book the best and you got to compete. So the competition, you know, how do you deal with the competition now? How's that kind of changed since we were in the game together?
Well, it's interesting, right? At its peak, there were about 100 plus competitors in the deal space. Yeah. And of course, just like any hot space over time, things sort of cool down and consolidate. There's a lot of consolidation. Of course, we're leading the charge on that. We are the largest digital deals and savings network in the country here with Emerge. But we've also essentially started viewing ourselves as basically our biggest bottleneck now, right? So essentially, it's not about how many groups. There's only two or three of us in the space that have lasted.
Right now, it's amazing and from
where we came from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, because those wars were crazy.
They're either out of business or purchased.
That's right. I mean, I remember the local businesses we would touch would occasionally, you know, half jokingly, but quite seriously, to be honest, tell us, you know, guys, I just got 9 or 10 calls being pitched by these deal sites.
Yeah.
This can't last. And in fact, it didn't, right? We are the largest player here. We compete with our, you know, depending on which niche, you know, we're now in golf, we're in travel, we're in groceries, and we have niche sites within there. So we compete with the largest within those niches. We don't have the broader sort of set of competitors, but the pressure is still absolutely there. I think, you know, there's always some sort of pressure, right? Yeah. Whether that's now profitability growing, whether that's the next acquisition, whether it's the next market. And I think that's the bigger point here in this, in that, you know, there will never be a time in your life when things are perfect or everything's flowing super smoothly.
Never.
So therefore you need to prepare yourself, and you need to do that. You need to know who you are and how your body and how your mind works. And you need time for yourself. You need to develop good habits. You need to know what your max limit is and be able to cool down. You need to take time off. You need to, you know, do things that calm you down.
Self-care.
Yeah,
you know, I think one of the biggest things for myself, you know, giving up all of the, you know, alcohol and any recreational drugs, almost a couple of years, you know, is now the ability to look at things through a different lens, you know, and have that ability to take yourself out of a fast paced or chaotic situation and take a look at it from multiple angles. You know, that's one of the things I've found that really helped me, because before I would react.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I gave up these substances, I didn't realize how unhappy I was until I became happy.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
if that makes sense.
That's very much,
you know,
the way life works, right? I mean, if we draw it back to, and this is something I don't really talk about often, but I think it's a great stage here and audience to be able to share and hopefully help others relate to you know, the high intensity life of an entrepreneur. But you were with me, you know, 3, 4, 5 months in to Emerge when we had acquired and the Bytopia, and we were
and shops assets
and really just starting with the playbook. And again, immense pressure to deliver after the first sort of restructuring. And so I was with you, actually, out of all people. We were together in the conference room when I told you I wasn't feeling well, and that was a critical juncture. That essentially what happened there was I thought I was having a cardiac arrest, pretty much.
I thought you were too.
Yeah,
I think I was hungover. Yeah. So I was even worse about it. I looked worse than you did.
There you go. But, you know, it was a serious situation. And I think we called the ambulance and ended up going for some tests and found out, you know, that was sort of the start of my journey where they said, look, like, you're perfectly fine. Your body's operating great. There's probably some sort of anxiety or panic attack. Yep. So let's see, you know, where this goes. And, you know, I didn't know anything about this. I would hear about anxiety here or there.
Yeah.
As you know, I'd like to think I'm a confident person and I'm a pretty healthy person overall. Yeah. So I never imagined, frankly, that I would have encountered any of this, you know.
Yeah.
And yet what turns out, you know, as I learned more about it, you know, over the coming weeks and months, and it happened, you know, one or two more times around that time frame, is essentially this is basically your body telling you you're going too fast, you're going too hard, you're not thinking enough, you're not breathing enough, and you're not worrying about, frankly, the right things and the important things in life. And so I had to take a step back and recalibrate. And I think the biggest way I was able to overcome that, and frankly, it's not like it's something that completely disappears, but the way I've been able to contain it is to learn more about it and to educate myself and to realize and to understand that it wasn't, you weren't going to die, right? Yeah. It's not a heart attack.
It's a science, I think, too.
It's exactly. You know. And then, you know, staying away from things that just frankly are going to keep causing chaos in your life, right?
Yeah.
Whether that's, you know, drinks or smoking or drugs. I don't do any drugs or ever have, but, like, you know, it's all around and there's always those different pressures. I'm a bit older now, so I'm a bit past that stage. But a lot of people, you know, one way or the other, are around stuff that's not good for them and they know it. And so there's always that saying that you're, and one of my favorites, you know, it says, you're probably the average of the four closest people around you.
Yeah.
Right. And so you got to think about who you hang out with. You got to think about, you know, and same goes for work as well. Like, if you're around the wrong employees or around ones that are pressuring you, or managers that are not giving, don't have context into the way you're wired, the broader way you live your life, then you're not going to have good mentors as well. Right.
Absolutely.
So it all ties in.
That's what I was going to say. You know, it's funny you bring that up. You know, this show, the beauty of this show is not everyone has to agree. I have the ability to say my opinion. And, you know, everybody says in this world, you know, that you should be kind to everyone and hang out with everybody. And I believe respecting everybody. I believe, you know, being kind to everybody you can. But you are the company you keep and you're judged by the company you keep. And the reality is, you know, people, places and things. When I hear terrible stories about people that either relapsed or died due to addiction or any type of thing where, you know, they get in the wrong place, they get shot by accident, who knows, all these different things. It's all because of people, places, and things, you know? So I think it's critical for anybody, especially if you're younger and you have less experience out there and you still have that drive, more of a drive for fun, it's really important to pick your friends wisely, you know? And I never understood when my dad said that to me.
Absolutely.
But I understand that more, you know, now.
And I think tying to the entrepreneurial context as well, for any founders out there or any folks in early startups where there's a tremendous amount of chaos, so to speak, I think it's important that, you know, entrepreneurship is lonely as is, you know, sort of founding things and running stuff and having, it sounds glitzy and glamorous. I think one of the big themes that emerge and things that I talk about is bringing it back to the basics, right? From a business perspective, that may mean scaling profitably and sustainably, you know, sort of making sure you can cover your costs, you can plan things out, which is lacking in the startup world. That's the business side. From a human side, I think it's very important to make sure that you're not alone in the journey, because it is a very tough one.
Sure it is.
So mentors, and, you know, speaking about it with others and aligning, having a management team you can trust.
Yeah.
Not, we've learned this the hard way many times. you know, sort of teamwork over talent any day, right? Talent on its own, if someone's an asshole or if a manager isn't going to be there for others or just be really self-promote and focus on their own trajectory without any credence to the team, these are problems that expedite and exacerbate stresses and anxieties.
Oh, and health definitely contributes to it.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So it's a natural thing. I mean, you spend 80, something like 80% of your waking hours at work in these startup sort of environments. And so it is a very big deal. It's not separation of business and personal. Yeah. You know, that becomes your environment. That's where you live. That's where you have lunch with these people. You spend more time with them than with your family.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's so key to be around the right people and to work at a company that has those values, doesn't just speak about them, but from the very top, you know, fosters sort of the human side of things and you know, grows that way as well as on the business side.
100%. I think another point we should touch on too is follow your passion. You know, one of the things that I realized as I kind of cleaned my act up, as you know, I'd been in the deal space with Bytopia, I guess we're looking at 9-10 years ago, you know, or for 9-10 years I was involved in that space. And I think sometimes, you know, you need to, what's going to help your mental health, what's going to help your energy, what's going to help your passion, you know, your deep passion to do, because you have to have passion when you're trying to be a high level executive or, you know, entrepreneur. You need that that extra prey drive, you know, and what better way than to love what you do, because you bring up 80% of your life is spent working. I don't want to hate 80% of my life,
that's,
you know,
right.
So I think it's important to, you know, find something that you're passionate about, that you love to do, that you would do for free, because we all start, I mean, you know, with any of my projects, your projects, you don't make any money when you begin them. You actually do them based on passion. So I think that's, I want you to touch on that.
I think two things there. You see, you know, if you hate, you know, 70 or 80% of your life, naturally, that's probably going to trickle into the rest of it as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, how many people do we know that hate their job and therefore aren't fun to hang around? Or, you know,
negative Nancy,
have resentment, you know, everywhere, right? So I think that's one thing. But to your point about having passion in what you do, you know, I am a pretty good example of that, because I told you at the very beginning of this this talk here that, you know, I was a banker for a couple of years and I did not excel in that structured environment. It's not for everybody. I was able to interview really well. I have no problem talking, as you know.
You're doing great, by the way.
Nor do you. So are you. Thank you.
You're a talker as well. I know you don't think of yourself as just a, you're a superior talker.
I appreciate it. I enjoy it, you know. And you know, so my shortcomings at the bank, who would have thought, certainly not me, that by putting me in another position, that I could lead and hire, 10 years later, have hired 300 people, sold over $1 billion across multiple brands, and raised capital from the, you know, the most sophisticated investors globally and so forth. You wouldn't believe that it's the same person.
But you followed your passion, right?
I followed my passion, which is building teams, which is telling stories, which is you know, thinking through. And I took some of my banking lessons along the way, like the way we acquire companies. We've acquired 5 companies in the last 4 years with Emerge. I've taken, you know, the playbook and how to think about finance. But the environment matters a lot. There's no way to win if you wake up not happy about what you're about to do.
Yeah, right? If you hate what you do, you're not.
And I see it in you. You're coming here today, you're a totally different man than when you were at the very end of your journey with deals where it no longer did it for you.
Yeah.
And you know, staying true to your heart and how you feel, and fall, it's hard as is, right? There's a lot of competition, a lot of hours going into it anyway. You might as well love what you do. And that's what the best in the world always say. I don't see anybody who's like number one in the world at anything that doesn't love what they do. They're obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's the only way to do it.
And I think, you know, I know for myself, you know, I always want to now try and push the bar, obviously to raise the bar, as I know you do as well. But I think what's funny about when you see similar stories, like even when I talk to Anatoly, Michelle, yourself, Axel, you know, one of the things that are very similar is that it's not good enough just to, you know, push the bar. It's also about what you're doing and having that code of ethics along with it, you know? And I think if you, not only do you believe in your product or service, because I remember, you know, someone said to me, you know, when you're selling something, and the next guest, actually, he's one of the more learned men I know in the government for Canada. He always told me, you know, if you're an expert in what you're doing, it's because you have passion enough to learn about it.
That's right.
So I think that knowing your product, knowing your service, but then having that code of ethics along with it. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, What does it make you feel like when you see your service helping a business mm-hmm. who has, you know, chosen you to be a provider for them?
I mean, that is a big piece of the puzzle in what makes it what it is to me every morning, yep. right? Walking into work, so I have my team, which I guard closely, and I do everything I can to make sure they have their own trajectories, and they could fathom a way where this can be their home for 3, 5, 10 years out as we continue to grow. Yeah,
part of the family.
But we also have our merchant partners, and we have our consumers. We have, you know, over 3 million members in Canada, as well yeah. as in the US now through our Underpar acquisition.
Congratulations on that. We're going to talk about that as well after.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It was a big one for us, and we were excited about the prospects. But then there's, you know, all these merchants, like businesses that count on us. And you know this. You played a big role here in driving foot traffic into these local businesses, SMBs and nationals. And, you know, it's a big thing for us. Sometimes we get consumed with the numbers
yeah.
and the financials. But we forget about the impact. I always tell people, like, yeah. we have a deal right now on WagJag, which is called Flying Squirrel. And we've sold over 35 or 37,000 vouchers. That's two stadiums worth
yeah.
Of kids running around, jumping up and down on trampolines yeah. around the country. So it's tremendous impact. And I remind the team, you know, to not only look at the numbers, but also, and that trickles to customer experience, which we don't view as an afterthought. We view it as, you know, the center a central point of yeah. our value prop is to make sure that our customers and our merchants are getting that value. Your point on ethics and whatnot, I think, is very important. With that immense pressure comes all these lines that are blurry, that for young startups, you know, they almost say
very gray.
It's very gray, and often you yeah. want to kind of come as close as you can to what you can get away with without breaking the law.
Yeah.
A lot of startups are run that way, and frankly, that's a VC or Silicon Valley backed mentality. Just yeah. go crazy. I mean, you hear about the way
Uber was spying.
Yeah. I mean, there was a story about Uber almost spying into Lyft's app, and there's always stuff like that because everybody pushes the limits to the max. It's such a competitive world.
You almost have to yeah. in a lot of cases, or you could be out of business.
Yeah, but frankly, I think that's matching that sort of message with addictive personalities is yeah. a very unhealthy thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And it causes even further strain and further likelihood that if folks have a problem or are, you know, overcoming a problem in the past, whether yeah. that's mental health or whether it's addiction, that, you know, that sort of thing just exacerbates it. So I think it's an unhealthy thing. And you know, back to basics mindset generally, not just in profitability, but in the way we run things and the way we yeah. interact with each other is a must.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a very tough position to be in when, you know, you know that you've got, you know, X target to hit and you look at what it could mean. Because in a corporation, let's be honest, you know, when you have these C-level executives, if they don't hit quota, well, you know, PepsiCo or Coca-Cola are yeah. going to be fine. If, in fact, you could probably take that person out and put a capuchin monkey in there and it might just vary by a few percentage points, you know.
That's right.
And not to knock people in those roles, they just have less, you know, out there as a risk. Entrepreneurs, I mean, you might know if you don't hit X amount of dollars in 20 days, 10 people are fired.
That's right.
You know, you don't have
those
buffers.
That's just a fact, right?
It's just how it is. You know, so I'm not knocking. I have many, many, obviously, friends, and we have many guests who are C-level executives or any other type of employees. There's just a different level, you know, on the table. It is what it is.
As I used to tell you, it's game 7 every day.
Yeah, like, man. It's much. Not like, look, man, you pop me into a vice president role with a Fortune 500 company, I may come up with an innovative packaging idea. I may come up with a new channel for them to serve. But at the end of the day, you know,
the machine is running.
It's running and it's going to run without me no matter what.
Yeah.
In many roles that we've been in, that plane almost hit the mountain. We keep it out of the mountain and we're doing that month yeah, by month. Yeah. I remember, you know, without bringing up different companies, but there was many times, you know, that the amount of pressure that you are faced with that decision, you know, do yeah. we tiptoe on the gray line or do we not? And if we don't do that, it's almost certainty that the plane has crashed. So I think keeping that level of ethics and as I've kind of grown my career. I try and stay away from situations or decisions like that because it's easy to say we won't do it. You know, but then you get in that position where you look over at little Linda there and you think about her not having a job for two kids at Christmas time. That's and right. That decision becomes increasingly different. So I think ethics does have to stand strong. But I try and work under less stressful situations where we have a little bit of money from the VCs or whatnot.
I think one of the biggest messages in my journey so far to myself that I remind myself of, as well as hopefully to others, is you've got to look at any given situation or any given risk or even any given reward a bit longer term than just now or never or do or die.
Yeah.
Because I give it helps you contextualize the fact that life does go on regardless of that particular point in time.
Yeah.
Sure, there may be implications business-wise and even short-term with the human side. But as you extend out and you think of yourself and your own journey, anyone listening, you know, if you're faced with a major issue or decision or pressure point, just remember, like, you're relatively young, I imagine, if you're listening to this show, regardless of age, by the way, it's more a mentality. But, you know, 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out, the problem or the issue you're having today will not last as long as you're committed to being true to yourself, being healthy, following your passion, and being good to people. I mean, those are sort of the four areas that I think if you can just do that no matter what, then of course you're going to win some, lose some. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, there may be major implications or ramifications in the short term. When we were done with TeamBuy, I had to walk away from a business that I'd built for 4 years and I had to really think about what that meant. And it felt like the end of the world in the moment in time. And yet today, just, you know, 4 short years later, so basically, you know, another 4 years after restarting with Emerge, we are double the size that we were. We are multiple times profitable, as you can imagine, because we were not at all over then. It wasn't built that way. I enjoy what I do. I know who I am better. I have a team and a business that I truly love. And I have a life that, you know, is very rewarding. Now, granted, it's still a crazy grind. My hours are through the roof. I still need time to find time and to push myself to breathe, right? But overall, like, whatever is done or undone in your life in a moment in time that scares you, you can reverse that day in and day out. And you talked to me about it and, you know, extensively with addiction and whatnot. It's like you take day by day, but people forget one day after one day after one day. Things start to change.
So little things done well every day.
That's right.
You know, that make the big result.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. And before you see it, you know.
Well, and one of the things I wanted to bring up about yourself is one of the reasons I respect you so much. There's many, but one of the main reasons is that you're a good person and that you're honest. You know, I think in all the different people that, you know, we've met over the years, and I'm not saying, you know, that you and I haven't made mistakes. You know, sometimes I played on the gray line early in my career a little bit more than I should have. You know, I didn't take a step back, and you know, I guess it really didn't bother me too much, the guy in the mirror, as long as the pockets were full and I had the new suit or vacation, you know. And I'll admit that. But as you grow, that stuff became not only more important to myself but also the people I associate with. And one of the biggest things that that I appreciate about you is that you're honest. You know, when you had acquired Buytopia and Shop, I knew of you. We knew of each other, but we hadn't really met. Yep. And one of the more impressive things was every single thing that you promised me, because now I'm a shareholder, everything you promised me came true. And for that, I really, you know, appreciate, you know, that about you. And that's huge for me. So
I really do appreciate that more than you probably imagine, because I think in a hyper competitive landscape, very little is talked about with regards to, you know, real qualities. And I do really believe I have that. And I believe the people around me that I've surrounded myself with do have that as well. You know, as you mentioned, you know, as you get older, you start looking at what really matters. And like feedback like this for me is a big deal. And it makes me want to even be better. No one's perfect. And there are probably other things that, you know, that I didn't deliver on for other people. But Hearing that from you makes me excited, makes me want to do more. And that's the way, you know, people have to share good stuff as well, right? Like, sometimes that stuff goes unnoticed or untalked about. And it's important to encourage each other when you do see strengths and things that have helped develop other people.
Well, listen, Ghassan, I want to do a quick plug for the new acquisition, and then we're going to wrap it up because I know you're busy. You're flying out to Montreal tonight.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit about the acquisition with UnderPar.
Yeah, so UnderPar is the largest golf deals business in Canada with a fast-growing presence in the U.S. It's our fourth acquisition overall. Obviously, you're a golf fanatic.
I'm terrible at it, apparently, but yeah.
But you try, and that's what matters.
I continue to try.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a niche play for us, and we're very excited about what it brings to the overall portfolio. Obviously, it's still in savings, it's still in deals, but golf is a fantastic sport that has, again, a very sticky audience and golf courses that need foot traffic at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. We bring about 300,000 golfers in North America to these about 500 courses and growing, and we bring them at discounted flash pricing and basically get them to connect with these golf courses. If they like them, you know what happens. You bring a friend, you end up drinking a wine
and
later.
You come back again.
Absolutely. Right? So it's a win-win for everybody, and it fits our broader message, but it's our first niche play, and there are other forays into future niche acquisitions coming in this year and in future years.
Amazing. I'm excited to see what continues. You know, also as a shareholder, it gets me excited every time I see some great news like that. Wagjeg.com, that's where you're going to get all the action, from events to different types of products to haircuts to restaurants,
travel,
everything, travel, and then now golf. So thank you, Ghassan, very much for coming by. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Really was a pleasure. Thanks. I'm very proud of everything you're doing here.
Thank you, sir. All right, Ghassan.
Thank you.